Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever from North America is Jeff Rimebold. We're not in a studio this week, and I'll have to take blame for that, Jeff. I've double booked myself, and that meant we missed our slot in the studio. Apologies for that, but how are you?
I'm playing hurt today, Neil. I got a bad cold, but hey, you know what? Sometimes you got to suck it up and go.
Absolutely. So we are going to talk a little bit of news from around the NFL. Not too much. We want to get into our State of the Franchise series. We're going to do the Buffalo Bills, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Cincinnati Bengals. And two of those teams, the Bills and Eagles, have just made so many headlines during the off-season. So we'll dig into those teams as they prepare for the 2015 season. A little bit of news coming out of the owners' meetings, which were in Arizona last week. And we will take your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, on the owners' meetings, they proposed 23 rule changes. Six were adopted for 2015. But I want to start with one that's been tabled for now and is probably going to be discussed again in May. They're looking still at the extra point, potentially moving the ball to the 1 yard line if you want to go for two, or moving it back to the 15 if you want to kick an extra point. I know you don't want this rule to be changed at all. We've had this conversation in the past. I'm of a mind that if you're going to start messing about with moving it to the 1 or moving it back to the 15, let's just do away with it altogether. I mean, what are your thoughts on a play which has become pretty much automatic in the NFL, but has been around since the very beginning of the NFL?
Well, it's amazing, Neil, because we just went through our league meetings here in the CFL, and we have changed we've done the same thing. Instead of having the ball at the 5 for an extra point, we're moving it back to the 30, all right? And if you want to go for 2, they're moving the ball to the 3-yard line. Well, up here you have to line up a yard off the ball, so it's basically very similar, the rule changes. Hmm. I don't particularly care for it, but I do understand it, because what they're trying to do is put what has become basically almost an automatic play, put some excitement into it, and encourage coaches to go for 2. Because you think about it, Neil, when you put the ball at the 1-yard line now, that really is enticing in terms of coaches going for, you know, the 2-point conversion as opposed to just kicking the convert. I think the 15-yard line, frankly, with the quality of the kickers in the National Football League, that's still almost a gimme. Mm. But I think the really impact of the rule is the enticement now for coaches to go for 2, and that's going to change the game strategically.
If the ball's on the 1-yard line, though, Jeff, are we not going to see a bunch more sort of pile-ups at the goal line, quarterback sneaks, potentially quarterbacks getting injured? I mean, that temptation is going to be there, isn't it? Because I guess you can sneak it from the 2-yard line, but it reduces your chances. If you're putting it on the 1, then teams are going to be very tempted to do that.
Well, that's one of the things that I don't like about the rule, because we talk all the time about player safety, and the league has done a great job with trying to make the game a safer game for the players. But those goal line pileups and those collisions on the goal line, you know, those things are violent plays, because it's such a restricted space and everybody, you know, is hunkered down in there, and there's no vertical stretch of the field for the defense, so the defense is basically just defending that 1-yard area. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I don't like it, because I think it is going to invite injuries. What you may see is teams doing special packages, Neil, where they'll get their third quarterback and, you know, have a goal line package for him from the 1, certainly as opposed to taking a guy, you know, your star, and an Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, a Peyton Manning, and, you know, putting them in a situation where you're trying to sneak it, may get, you know, hit in the back or whatever, and you lose your quarterback.
They changed some of the language on the what constitutes a catch. You don't have to make that football move anymore, but you do have to, if you're falling to the ground, you have to have possession all the way to the ground. And, the way they've worded it now wouldn't have overturned the, you know, Dez Bryant's catch against the Packers in the playoffs. This is...
when you're changing language of a rule, Jeff, is that just, you're just changing interpretation? You're just making it a grey area still? I mean, this is something you felt passionately about during the playoffs. Have they been definitive enough here?
You know, this thing gives me a migraine. It gives me a migraine because every time they fool around with it, it's just more legalese and more semantics. And hey, you know, football move. Well, what's a football move? Now it's two steps and another step. I mean, come on, stop it. It's just, it's crazy. And I think what they're trying to do, frankly, is it's a lot of CYA. And, you know, obviously this whole thing has been, it's a series of reactions to a play. So it's one catch prompts one rule, then a no catch prompts another interpretation of the rule. And I don't know if it's ever going to be perfect science because, you know, it's just because we're dealing with the human element and the plays happen so fast and you're asking officials to do almost the impossible task. But there's got to be a way they can clear this thing up and not make it so nebulous.
Yeah, as Jeff said, lots of cover your arms in there. That's what you meant, wasn't it, Jeff?
I was thinking of a part of your anatomy a little more south than your arms.
Oh, fair enough. Just so we clear that up. One other thing, the medical timeout. Your thoughts on that? Because this is now independent observers can stop the game if they feel that a player is in medical need. And you know, again, it's that trying to save players from themselves a little bit here, Jeff. Is this what we're looking at? And again, paramount to player safety?
Well, I think this one really is the Julian Edelman situation in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where he took that vicious hit over the middle in the fourth quarter and stayed in and finished the drive. Now, I have talked to a friend of Julian's who's told me that Julian said he was out on his feet at that time but wasn't going to come out of the game. And you know, he's a warrior, he's an absolute competitor, and sometimes you need to help these guys, to kind of save these guys from themselves. You notice how now when there's any kind of even close to a head injury on the sideline, first thing the trainers do is take their helmet so that they can't grab their helmet and run back onto the field, which has happened in the past. So I think this is a really good rule. I think it's going to have some, you know, there'll be some times when it's going to be, you know, the coaches are going to get frustrated by it. But the bottom line is player safety. Mm. And obviously when you saw that hit in the Super Bowl and you saw the way he kind of wobbled when he got up, you never want to put a player, particularly when it comes to head injuries, never want to put a player in a situation where he's making the choice to go back in the game when it's obvious that he's taken a real strike to the head.
Absolutely. Player safety, absolutely key in the NFL. I like that move a lot. Let's move on to our state of the franchise series then, and we'll start with the Buffalo Bills. So the Bills would have been picking 19th in round one, but they gave that pick to the Cleveland Browns to move up last year and grab Sammy Watkins in 2014. Their first pick will be 50th overall. They also gave up a fourth round pick this year in a previous trade for Bryce Brown. We'll talk about Bryce in a few moments. But the Bills went 9-7 in 2015. They finished second in the AFC East, but they still parted ways with Doug Marone as head coach. But since then, Jeff, well, they've been one of the most interesting, aggressive, in the news teams of this offseason. And I read with interest earlier this week that season ticket sales are at a record pace in upstate New York. So you're close to Buffalo. You get a lot of the sports talk radio shows there. We've seen Rex Ryan come in as head coach. We've got Percy Harvin is there, LeSean McCoy. They've got Charles Clay coming in. I mean, tell us just first of all the buzz that is around this team, and then I guess, you know, some of that bravado that Rex naturally brings.
Well, you know, a number of the coaches on that staff are friends of mine, and you know what you're hearing, both in the media and from them, is just how excited everybody else is in Buffalo about the direction of this football team. Now, here's the thing you got to understand, Neil. This is a team when Mr. Wilson owned the team, when Ralph Wilson owned the team, that, you know, he was a loyal guy to Buffalo and said, as long as I'm alive, the team will never move from Buffalo. But Mr. Wilson wasn't known for going out and making splash hires or going out and signing big money free agents or those kinds of things. And so the team has kind of, you know, it's kind of just always been there. It has an incredibly loyal fan base up here. But I think even before, you got to go before Rex. Go to the to Terry Pegula, you know, getting the opportunity to own the football team. That was a huge change for the Buffalo Bills. Now, Mr. Pegula, who also owns the Buffalo Sabres hockey team here, is a guy that wants to win and wants to win championships, and he's a Western New York guy. Mm. The first positive thing when Pegula got the team was the fans knew that the team was going to stay in Western New York. And then he said that we are committed to winning. And you look at what he has done. The first thing, hire Rex. Well, there are a lot of people that, you know, when you get Rex, you get a lot of things. Number one, you get that bravado. Number two, you get a team that's going to play a certain way. And they gave Rex the power, along with Doug Whaley, the general manager, to go out and be aggressive in the offseason. The Bills, Neil, have spent $91 million in signing players this offseason. Well, $91 million.
Oh. Yeah, and I guess people could, you know, people could be critical and say, well, they've overpaid for Charles Clay. You could look at Charles Clay, who's going to be paid. He's the highest paid tight end in the NFL this year. Now he's going to be earning north of $11 million per season for the next 2 years. You could say they didn't need to give LeSean McCoy a big new contract when they traded for him. But this is a team that only last year broke its streak of 9 straight losing seasons. They haven't made the playoffs for 15 years in a row. That's the longest streak in the NFL. So at some point, you might have to go the extra mile to persuade people to come to the Buffalo Bills. And I think they should probably be applauded for being as aggressive as they have in the offseason. They looked at EJ Manuel and said, we're not sure. We know that Kyle Orton is going to retire. So they go and get Matt Cassel. Now, Matt Cassel's not, you know, he's not a premier quarterback, but he could be a bridge quarterback for a year or so. So, you know, I think some of the moves, even some of the financial ones where you might be able to question it, you can at least see the logic behind it.
Well, let me tell you something. Rex is selling hopes and dreams 2-for-1 in Buffalo, right? And I'm going to tell you something.
I'll have one.
If you think about it, let's go with the ifs. What if LeSean McCoy, behind that offensive line, can rush for 1,600 yards again? What if Percy Harvin can play, you know, 16 weeks of high-level football and not become a distraction because he's a dynamic player? What if Charles Clay gives them the threat at tight end that Scott Chandler never could? Mm. What if Sammy Watkins explodes in his second season? What if that defense plays as dominant as they showed they could play last year? Well, if all of those things happen, or even a combination of those things happen, along with what if Matt Cassel can go back to being the quarterback that he was that year when Brady was out and he had to step in and had that awesome season. Well, then I think the what ifs say that the Bills are going to be right there in the hunt, you know, certainly for a division championship. And once you get in the playoffs, who knows what might happen. So there's a lot of hope in Buffalo right now.
Yeah, and Rex is, Rex, we know, has built winners based on good defense and a running game. And it looks like he's going to try and do the same again here, Jeff. The defense last year was ranked 4th in the NFL, offense was 26th. But they're deep at running back as well. I was fortunate to spend time with Eric Wood, the starting center for the Bills, a few weeks ago. And we were sitting having breakfast, and we were talking about players on their team. And he said, you know what, as an offensive lineman, Fred Jackson is a lineman's dream. Because Fred Jackson is the most disciplined, the most intelligent runner you'll find, you know, and he's getting up there in years, but he's a nice compliment to LeSean McCoy as well, isn't he? So they've got some pieces in place now, especially as you say, if Sammy Watkins grows, Robert Woods is there as a receiver, you know, maybe Cassel only does need to be a game manager.
I think there's some evidence that Rex learned from his experience with the Jets. Because as a defensive coach, I think his belief was when he went to the Jets that, hey, as long as I, you know, our defense will win games for us. And they did. But then when they became so quarterback deficient, that I think he learned that you got to upgrade yourself on offense. And give him credit. You know, when you look at it, he's now, again, Rex is a dyed-in-the-wool defensive coach. And you go out and, you know, you look at what he's done offensively compared to what he's done defensively in this offseason. That shows a great level of maturity to me. And he's gone out and got himself a Matt Castle that, you know, I think, if he can get back to what he did, you know, that year with the Patriots. And, you know, remember now, Matt Castle beat out Teddy Bridgewater coming out of training camp last year and was a starting quarterback for the Vikings until he got hurt. So there's evidence that he can play at a high level. You add LeSean McCoy to Fred Jackson to Bryce Brown, who's a, you know, Bryce Brown's rushed for 200 yards in a game in the National Football
League. Jeff, I know you're friends with Rex and Rob, and this is just classic Rex Ryan. He talked about Bryce Brown, and he said, the fast dude, and I'm not going to learn his name until he holds on to the football.
Well, that's been the thing with him. Now, I'll tell you what, I know those two guys, and you put that little brown piece of pigskin on the ground, they're going to ask you two questions: aisle or window on your way out of town.
What about the front four, Jeff? I mean, it's excellent. We know that. Mario Williams, 14 and a half sacks. Jerry Hughes, 10 sacks. That's on the edge. You've got Kyle Williams, who at first glance is a run-stuffing space eater. Well, he had 5.5 sacks last year. And then Marcel Darius has 10 sacks. They've managed to keep all four of those together. They've got a couple of good young linebackers behind them in Preston Brown and Nigel Bradham. Maybe that's why they didn't feel they needed Kiko Alonso. But up front is where it starts on that defensive side of the ball, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's Rex's thing. He wants great defensive fronts. He's got all the pieces. They went out and got Jerry Hughes to stay. Now, I'm going to give you some little bit of insider stuff. What I'm hearing is that, you know, Darius is going to be a free agent next year.
Yep.
Right? So he's 25 years old, Neil, and one of the best nose tackles in the league. Now, granted, he's had a couple off-the-field issues, and, you know, he's probably going to get suspended for at least a game or probably more like two or three games this season. But I think the Bills are moving to try and get him extended maybe 8 years, make him a $100 million guy, and then spread that over the 8 years of the cap. Because if you think about it, at 8 years and give him $100 million, it's not cap-friendly, but it's certainly not – it doesn't kill you in the cap. But he's so young that, you know, he's 33 at the end of the contract, and that's about – you know, if he can play like Wolfork and some of those bigger guys, and, you know, for a high level for a long time, that's a heck of a deal for them. And then, you know, they've got a couple guys that on that defense that they need to lock up. And I think this Buffalo is primed to be a good team, a competitive team in that AFC East for a number of years because they're young and they're talented. And, you know, again, they're doing things in the offseason. We haven't even talked about Incognito. I mean, they got a hole at guard. They go out and get Incognito. And I'm also hearing that, you know, the Eagles are trying to get rid of one of their Pro Bowl guards.
Yeah, Evan Mathis.
Mathis. And the Bills are trying to find a way that they could, you know, he's a $6 million cap hit, but they're trying to find a way that they could fit him in there too. So they're doing everything they can to try and win. And if you're a Bills fan, and I know Kevin Cadle hanging out in Cadle Towers with his, you know, embroidered slippers up on the, you know, on his marble top desk right now, smoking a Cuban cigar, is thinking things are good in Buffalo. So that's the best they've been since Jim Kelly was throwing rockets around the field.
Yeah, they are. I mean, actually, Jim Kelly, and this is the one area, if I'm going to play Killjoy and we need to see it develop, Jim Kelly was the last quarterback for the Bills to throw 25 touchdowns in a season. That happened in 1991. One guy we haven't mentioned, Jeff, we've talked about the defense, we've talked about all the skill position players, you know, they're good in the secondary as well. That we've seen that. One guy we haven't mentioned, EJ Manuel. Are they done with him? Have they completely lost faith in him?
I don't get the sense that they're done with him. But I think what they want is for him to develop. And, you know, in the ideal scenario, they would play Castle. Castle will win. My anticipation is Castle will win the starting job. Manuel will be the backup. But continue to try and help him develop. Because you don't want to go out and take another quarterback in the draft. I mean, that's a first-round pick. And, you know, again, he got thrown in before he was ready. Let's just be honest about it.
Yep.
And now, again, take a step back, take a deep breath, try and develop. I will tell you this. No quarterback in Buffalo will throw 25 touchdown passes as long as Rex Ryan's a head coach. You can take that one to the bank. So if you're expecting somebody to throw 25, it ain't happening with Rex at the control.
No, you're quite right. The ground and pound is about to live in Buffalo, but the arrow is definitely up for the Bills. Let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles then. Again, another team who just makes so many headlines, and it's been an incredible off-season. First of all, a glance back at 2014. There was lots of criticism of Nick Foles. The turnovers were up. Mistakes were through the roof. But he did lead the Eagles to a 6-2 start before getting hurt. This was a talented team that sent 9 players to the Pro Bowl, but they lost 3 of their last 4 games and missed the playoffs. And offense was ranked 5th in the NFL. And this is telling, Jeff. They were top 10 in rushing, top 10 in passing, but last in turnovers. Defensively, they were 28th in the NFL, and they were 31st against the pass. And I would say, actually, looking back at the Eagles outside of a big Thanksgiving Day win at Dallas, you could tell they were a step below the NFL's elite. They got easily handled by the likes of Green Bay and Seattle.
Yeah, and you know what? It was shocking because once they beat the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, I mean, everybody was thinking it's just a done deal, and you know, here we go. They're going to be the, you know, the runaway AFC East winner and or NFC East winner, and then yeah, it just fell apart on them. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at my notes right here, Neil, and I got to see their offseason moves, and it's about a page long. So when Chip got control of personnel. And, you know, there's big speculation about how that happened. And, you know, he claims that the owner came to him and said, hey, I want you to take charge of everything. And that's, you know, if that's the case, then however it happened, he has taken control of this thing. And now I heard in the mailbag we had a comment about, you know, has he set himself up for failure because he's made so many, you know, not wild moves. I wouldn't describe them as that. But, you know, somewhat unpopular moves, moving guys like Macklin and Shady McCoy and those kind of guys that are, you know, fan favorites.
Jeff, I think we could. I think actually, if you look back, if you think back now, cast your mind back to week one, 2 seasons ago when Chip Kelly was just coming into the NFL and there was a huge amount of publicity about what he was going to do with the likes of DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Macklin and LeSean McCoy. I think the fact that he sent them packing within 2 years is pretty wild, actually. I mean, I think those are 3 foundation players on your offense. Now, maybe they're not foundation players in your locker room, and maybe this is what Chip knows that we will never know. But, you know, those were 3 stars of your attack, and you've sent them off and said, I'd rather go with my guys.
Well, let me tell you something. I've known Chip Kelly since he was the offensive coordinator at the University of New Hampshire, you know, in 2000.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you can, there are 2 things you can never say about Chip Kelly. Number one, that he's a dummy, because he is a smart man. Mm. Number two, that he doesn't have conviction, because he believes, I mean, the whole thing that they do offensively was hit by his design, and it was so out of the box, but he believed in it and just took it to Oregon. Had success with it there, and he's had success with it in the NFL. So he knows what he wants. He knows the kind of football player he wants on his football team, particularly offensively. Mm. Now, again, when you start getting rid of, you know, DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Macklin and LeSean McCoy, you're talking about dynamic NFL players. So, you know, there is going to be a ripple effect. There's going to be some people who are going to look around and go, what is going on in Philadelphia? But, you know, I truly believe he knows what he, you know, what he wants. He goes out and gets DeMarco Murray. He gets Ryan Matthews. And I think Ryan Matthews not having to be the feature back really good for Ryan Matthews. Ryan Matthews is a talented football player.
Very, very talented. Let's talk about those running backs in a second, Jeff. I want to ask you about Sam Bradford first. We'll do the quarterback and then we'll move on to those running backs, because I think Chip came in for a bit of criticism with the Bradford thing, and then I think he stopped the bleeding with the signing of 2 very good running backs still in Murray and Matthews. But Sam Bradford's played 7 games over the past 2 seasons. We know he's coming off back-to-back torn ACLs. I've got a couple of questions on this, Jeff. One, as a passer, is he what Chip Kelly wants for this offense? Because, you know, decision-making and accuracy were not strong points of Nick Foles last year, but I've seen some of that beaten out of Sam Bradford as well. So that's my first question. As a passer, you know, it will Bradford step up to the plate? And my second question is, we saw a lot of the zone read stuff from the Philadelphia Eagles in previous years. Is that gone now? Because there's no way I'm buying the fact that Sam Bradford's keeping that football.
Well, I agree with you, Neil. I think there's some things about that that make me truly believe that Sam Bradford may be a piece to a bigger puzzle as we get closer to the draft.
Mm. And I love it. Conspiracy theories.
I can't verify that, right? I cannot verify that. But I just look at it and you see a guy who doesn't fit the zone read scheme. He's had multiple injuries, so you obviously don't want to expose him to hits. He's a frail guy to begin with. Now, when you go back to his Oklahoma days, when he came out and he was picked, you know, first, the greatest asset that he had as a quarterback was his accuracy. He's been in a shotgun spread offense at Oklahoma. That's where he thrived. Mm. Although it wasn't his own read scheme. Then he goes to St. Louis, and I mean, he just got pumped. It was chuck and duck every time he went back to throw the football. And so you really can't get a read on what's left after the beating that he took. So this is really an interesting one for me. But somehow, somewhere in the recesses of my brain, I just believe that he's a pawn in a bigger game.
Well, you're not alone in
thinking that may mean a trade.
Yeah, you're not alone in thinking that, Jeff. I mean, there's people that still think that the Eagles, who picked 20th in round one of the NFL draft, are going to make some sort of move for Marcus Mariota. And I saw that the Cleveland Browns still feel there's a chance they can get Sam Bradford. So, you know, the Eagles have been a fascinating watch in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, part of me as well, maybe it's just the journalist in me hoping, but part of me thinks that they could be a fascinating watch in the next month or so.
Yeah, it is. And I think this is going to be one of the things, this is one of the scenarios as we really ramp up to the draft, and I know you're going to do a great job with your analysis of the draft, and certainly, you know, I'm going to weigh in from my standpoint, and I think that everybody who's interested in the draft and interested in the NFL, this is going to be one of the talking points that we'll hash over and discuss as we get closer to the draft.
Those running backs I mentioned, DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews. I'm with you, Jeff. I think Ryan Matthews on his day a couple of years ago when San Diego made that late run to the playoffs, Matthews was so impressive, and he was banged up then as well. But they've added DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews, probably both more direct runners than LeSean McCoy. So is that a hint at a change in style a little bit? And I'll ask you this. Murray had... go on. Yeah, go on, Jeff.
Well, I think if you go back, that's the guy Chip wants, right? That's the guy that he truly, really likes as his feature back. Or, you know, if you use two, you know, two feature backs. One-cut guys that can stick their foot in the ground and get vertical. He's got Darren Sproles for that change of pace back,
yeah.
Right? So I think this is him getting what he wants in the tailback, you know, and that's a guy that will stick his foot in the ground, get north and south, but yet has the ability to, you know, to hit a big one on you. Because both Matthews and Murray can, if they pop it, they can go the distance for you.
Murray had 449 touches in 2014, led the NFL in rushing with 1,845 yards. But 2015 will only be his fifth season coming up. So, Jeff, with modern medicine, the way players can recover, is he in his prime or is he damaged goods?
Well, I think the way, as good as the medical people are today, and, you know, the way that they're able to take care of injuries and manage injuries, and the Eagles, frankly, are at the forefront of the analytics approach to, you know, how much your players run, how much they're on their feet, how much they sleep they get, when they eat, all the nutritional things. The Eagles are at the forefront of all of that since Chip's come in. So I think that bodes well for a guy like Ryan Matthews. And the thing about Chip is he'll understand what he's got. He's now got two good backs that he doesn't have to beat up, that he doesn't have to pound. And, you know, you think about a guy like Murray, man, oh, man, oh, man. You know, you got two guys that have led the league in rushing. I mean, now, and their assurance touches out of backfield. And then you got a change of pace guy like Sproles, who can do all the things he can do in the screen game and catching the ball out of the backfield. Again, it's really going to be interesting to see how he utilizes these guys.
What do you think about the receiving options, Jeff? We've still got Riley Cooper. Jordan Matthews was a really good find last year in the second round. They've just added Miles Austin, I saw, but I think Miles Austin had 47 catches in Cleveland last year, but he was not the player that he was in Dallas a few years ago. They got Brent Celek and Zach Ertz at tight end. Do they need another receiver, or are you happy with that group?
I would think that might be a place they go in the draft.
Yeah.
If they can find a big, over-the-top speed guy, that might be a place they look in the draft. Cooper's going to give you the intermediate routes. He'll make the, get you the possession catches, those kinds of things. They had success with their rookie last year. You look at the tight ends, they're good enough at tight end. I think they've taken a couple hits on the offensive line, but, again, I think Chip knows what he wants. And I would not be surprised if early in the draft they don't take a receiver.
Mm. Defense, then. Let's talk defense. 28th in the NFL, as I said. 31st against the pass. And is that where they started, Jeff? Secondary was a major need. They paid it a bunch of money to Byron Maxwell. Then they get Walter Thurman. So they got two ex-Seahawks in the secondary. They might still need another cornerback there. You need three good cornerbacks in today's NFL. Is that where you'd start? Is that what you're looking at, where your big concern is on defense?
Yeah, I think that was where they needed to go, number one, because the guys that they had last year just didn't get it done for them. And what Maxwell brings you is that long corner, that big, tall corner. And think about the NFC East, Neil. You've got big receivers, that you have to line. Long guys like Beckham. Long guys like Dez Bryant.
Yeah, Garcon and Washington.
You got to line. Mm. Yeah, and you got to line up against those kinds of guys. So he's your matchup there. Now, Thurman is interesting for me because when he was with the Seahawks in 2014, he had a great year. Then he went free agent to the Giants and hurt his chest and didn't play very much. So if he can recapture his, play and come back and give them that high-level other corner, then again, in the draft, see if you can find yourself a third corner. And I think they're ready to go. They let Nate Allen go. Nate Allen went to the Raiders, and he struggled last year. So I would like to see him take another safety, maybe. I think what they did yesterday, bringing DeMeco Ryans back, is a real positive thing. It's kind of a logjam at linebacker now because you got Kiko Alonso and you got DeMeco Ryans, but I think that's they're kind of hedging their bets a little bit because Ryans has got the Achilles and Kiko's coming off of an ACL.
They both have concerns there. With Alonso, Jeff, because, this is not the NFL, this is not the Mike Singletary at the heart of the 85 Bears. This is not Dick Butkus. This is not Harry Carson with the New York Giants. You can get by without a pounding middle linebacker, I guess, to a degree now. So trading for somebody like Alonso, was that... he was Chip Kelly's guy. Is he Chip Kelly's voice in the locker room? Is it important for coaches to have players like that in the locker room? Would that be part of what that deal was?
Well, it's interesting because when you know Kiko Alonso's history, he had an injury at Oregon, and he also got in Chip's doghouse when he was at Oregon.
Oh, okay.
So, it's not like he's a guy. He did play at Oregon. He played for Chip. They know each other, obviously, very well. But, again, there was a time at Oregon where he was, he was in Chip's doghouse. Now, again, how that relationship has grown from that point, I really can't tell you. But I do know this. Kiko Alonso, when he's healthy, is a guy that can play sideline to sideline linebacker and do an awful lot of things. So you combine him with DeMeco Ryans, who's really a good player between the tackles, and everybody I talk to in the NFL, Neil, talks about what a quality guy DeMeco Ryans is and what a great leader he is in the locker room. And so I think that's another reason why you see, even though he may not be an every down player and may not even be ready for the start of the season, I think that's another reason why Chip made the decision to bring DeMeco Ryans back on a 1-year deal.
Yeah, and with Alonso, Jeff, there aren't many linebackers around the NFL that will get you 5 or 6 interceptions a season, and we saw that with him as a rookie, so he can play the pass as well.
Yeah, that's what I say. He's a really athletic guy, and he can go sideline to sideline. He can run with most tight ends and certainly most backs, and he has great ball skills for a linebacker. So, you know, that's one of the areas where the Eagles need to improve is in creating turnovers. And I think, you know, you look at that and you say, you bring in Byron Maxwell, you bring in Thurman, you bring in Kiko Alonso, you're making steps in the right direction. I think they got a draft on defense. We'll see how that goes. But, again, you'd like to see they lose Trent Cole, so you'd like to think that they're going to, you know, they brought Brandon Graham back.
Yep.
But, you know, they need those 3-4 outside backers that can rush the passer too.
It's funny, Jeff. We always do the whole arrow up, arrow down thing, and we know they'll be booing in Philadelphia. That's what they do. But it feels like they're not quite finished yet. I mean, we've got the draft is a big part of all the teams, but it could yet be a headline for the Eagles. So, it feels like off-season incomplete at the moment, but what do you make of where this team is heading? Because they, as talented as they were, that was a disappointing finish last year.
Well, I think they're. I agree with you, Neil. I don't think they're done. No, you mentioned the fact that they're trying to move, you know, $6 million out of the offensive line.
Mm.
And, again, what will that do for them? You know, does that allow them to go out? There's still some quality free agents on the market
there
right
are.
Now. And does that allow them to go out and do some late deals? It's obvious that Chip is not afraid, you know, to trade he'll think, again, all of the things that make him so dangerous as an offensive coordinator, his ability to think outside the box, his ability to, you know, get the most out of his talent, all of those things make him a dangerous guy to trade with, too.
Yeah. Well, I suppose as a coach, tell us from a coach's point of view, Jeff, and, you know, the impact that has on the players. Yeah, absolutely no one is safe in Philadelphia. If you don't bring your A game and you don't buy in 100%, because, you know, like I said, from a couple of years ago, there are no bigger names than DeSean Jackson, LeSean McCoy, and Jeremy Maclin, and they're all playing somewhere else now.
And isn't that refreshing?
It's good.
I mean,
it is good.
It is, because the inmates should never run the asylum. And too many times, you know, and you think about it, and I'm going to tell you, there's a team in that same division that has been mired in mediocrity for years, and that's one of the challenges that they have.
Yeah, they're in Mace running the asylum, definitely there. He's playing quarterback for them. Let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals to finish off our state of the franchise then. The Bengals made the playoffs for the fourth straight season, but they were one and done again for the fourth year in a row. They've now lost 7 consecutive playoff games. They went 10-5-1 in the regular season, but again, we always end with the most recent memory. They were easily handled by Indianapolis in the wild card round of the playoffs. They lost 26-10. Offense was 15th in the NFL, 21st in passing. They were 22nd in the NFL on defense, and they were last in sacks. They just had 20 quarterback sacks. We'll start in a second with Andy Dalton. But I read recently, Jeff, from the owners' meetings that Marvin Lewis was asked about the playoff losses, and he said that it was on their defense. Not on Andy Dalton, but Dalton is now 0-4 in the postseason. So let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Marvin is trying to do when he makes that statement is he's trying to deflect a little bit of criticism off of a guy who's very criticized,
sure,
not only in Cincinnati, but now, you know, nationally and internationally in the media. For his not being able to get them over the hump. They get to the playoffs, they'll win a division even, but it's one and done every time they go to the playoffs. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, your success in the playoffs is how you ultimately measure a quarterback.
Agreed.
And the book right now on Dalton is he can get you there, but that's as far as he's going to take you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they didn't tackle well in that game against Indianapolis. The Colts really controlled the second half of that game. But there was a play, Jeff, which we talked about on air that night, and we talked about it in the podcast the week after, where he had a wide-open Brandon Tate, and he just didn't have the awareness and the vision to lead him in the right place of the field, which would have been for a touchdown. You know, these are things now when you're a good few years into your career, like Andy Dalton is, that do raise those question marks, and some of it's unfair, but it was the same with Matt Ryan. It was until he won a playoff game. I mean, it's just It's just the nature of the business of being a quarterback, I think. And yeah, if you succeed in the postseason, that is when the most attention is on you. That's when you're expected to step up and deliver. But, you know, I always have that. We've said it time and time again. Be careful what you wish for. I mean, there is no viable alternative option, is there, here for the Bengals at the moment?
No. And let's be honest. Andy Dalton's a good quarterback. He's a good quarterback.
Good, yeah.
The question is he the guy that can make that critical throw in a big game to win the game for you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the throw that he had the chance to make. The one you're talking about was on a post cut, and he didn't lead the receiver away from the defender. That throw is the one that will define you, because that's the opportunity to win the game with a big play. And all the great quarterbacks in history, the ones you remember, have done that in the playoffs. They've done that at some level in the playoffs. Now, that doesn't mean, because Bill won a Super Bowl, that he's a better quarterback than Andy Dalton. I don't believe that, right? But it does mean that even though you think about Dan Marino, who never won a Super Bowl, he made great throws in pressure environments to move his team along in the playoffs. So, you know, Jim Kelly never won a Super Bowl, but he got his team as far as they were capable.
Yeah.
Because he could make plays with his arm that other guys couldn't. Andy Dalton has not done that yet.
Let's look at some of the weapons around Andy Dalton. So in that playoff game, he was without A.J. Green and Jermaine Gresham. That hurt the Bengals, no doubt. But, you know, A.J. Green, if he's back at full speed and healthy, is one of the best receivers. Marvin Jones was a big loss last year. He had 10 touchdowns the year before. Mohamed Sanu gives the Bengals a good trio of receivers. The offensive line is probably the most consistent group on this team in 2014. Good running back pairing in Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, they, you look at them, and you look at them on paper, particularly offensively, and you say, this is a good football team. And it is a good football team. And, you know, can they get Gresham back? Well, we'll see. That's going to be a big key to them, I think. They got to get healthy at receiver. They've got good enough backs. I truly believe the backs are good enough. You know, but again, we there's that, you know, question again. Can Dalton make the critical throws? And I know how you watch them and you see how they try and keep the pressure off of him as much as they can. Don't ask him to make those big throws. But the game at the highest level, the game at playoff football level, the game when it really matters the most, requires you to make those throws. You can't be sheltered from it enough. And so at some point, if this football team is going to get to the next level, which they're capable of, I think, right now, but the window's closing, because we'll talk about defense here in a second, then they've got to get better play from their quarterback.
Yeah, I think they're going to let Gresham test free agency. He's got some quite serious injury concerns, so I don't think he's going to be back. Tyler Eifert is going to have to step up at tight end. That's the offense. Defensively, the headline, as I mentioned, Jeff, that you know, I remember this being a team that was pretty stout on defense not that long ago. You know, and they had their good play in the secondary this year, I thought. There was injuries at linebacker, but let's start right up front where, you know, if this is a league where you have to stop the other team throwing it all over the field. 16 games they played in the regular season, they mustered 20 sacks.
Yeah, and you know what? You look at this team, this defensive football team, and where I see are age spots all over it. And start right inside, you know, in the middle of the defensive line. And Demonte Pecco was never a great pass rusher, but now you're starting to see people run the football on this team too.
Yeah, you are.
And, you know, that's a guy where I think they need to upgrade. Their pass rush was, you know, it went from being really good in 2014 to almost non-existent in 2015. Some of that was Zimmer's scheme. Some of that was his more aggressive approach to defense. But they did not get the play that they needed out of their front.
They've added A.J. Hawk. They've added Pat Sims. I mean, part of this is, again, that desire to be more physical in the AFC North. And you know, you mentioned the running game, Jeff. They allowed a 100-yard rusher 8 times last year. So, you know, they need to be tougher on in their run defense. Vontaze Burfict is he's an injury worry to me, Jeff, all the time. He just plays that way. Yeah, Bob Sanders played that way for the Colts. You love watching him play, but you knew he wasn't long for the league because it was just so reckless.
Yeah, you know what, and that's a great point because, you know, he has had that. And now there's a guy that's a great player but has been on the shelf. And, you know, no matter how good a player is, he's not helping you if he's on IR.
Yeah.
And then you bring in – this A.J. Hawk thing baffled me a little bit, right?
He lost his job in – he lost his job in Green Bay.
You got Ray Mahalunga inside who's – getting older and, you know, had limitations when he came into the league. Great player against the run, tough, all that stuff, but doesn't move particularly well. And then you go out and you get A.J. Hawk, who had lost his job in Green Bay. So I don't see that as an upgrade. I just was baffled by that move when they went out and signed him. They lose Patrick Newman in the secondary, and then you got guys, you know, you look around at that secondary, and, you know, how much more, you know, does Pac-Man Jones have, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I think they might move to what Dre Kirkpatrick was good last year. They had a bit of a coming out party against Denver, so hopefully they see him and Darquez Dennard as the young pairing back there. They've got a couple of good safeties as well. But, yeah, Pac-Man's getting up there now, isn't he, in years. So, I mean, generally, Jeff, we're looking at sort of arrow-up team here, or with the They got to break through that playoff barrier, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm not going to say, you know what, and I just look at this football team, Neil, and I see a team that this off season in free agency really hasn't helped themselves.
No.
You know, I think they've actually lost some players that, you know, that or lost opportunities to add players that could have really helped them. This to me is a typical Bengals offseason. I think Marvin Lewis has done a phenomenal job in a very tough situation where, you know, ownership has not ever, you know, how the Pegulas, we talked about what they've done to,
yep,
to, you know, really go out and be aggressive in the marketplace. Marvin's never had that, and he's constantly getting this team, you know, right at the playoff level or in the playoffs. So I think Marvin has done a phenomenal job in Cincinnati, but the reality of this football team is it's, you know, starting to show its age spots. They haven't improved themselves in the offseason. What they do in the draft will determine to me where their arrow is. I'd say plateaued right now. Mm. If they don't have a good draft, I'm going to say this is a team on a downward spiral.
Well, that was going to be my last question then, Jeff, because you mentioned Marvin Lewis, and part of this team has plateaued. So there was some Bengals fans calling for his head at the end of the season. He's been head coach of the Bengals since 2003. So is it good to have that consistency? Or because the progress has halted slightly, has his message become stale? Would it have been good time to make a change in the offseason? Or again, is that careful what you wish for?
Well, I think that's one of those careful what you wish for deals because, you know, that is such a different organization. Cincinnati's a different market. It's, you know, you're dealing with the Brown family that own the team and, you know, how they do business is typically a little different than most other teams. You know, obviously Marvin understands how it works. It has to be extremely frustrating for him. And I know that a couple times that he's, you know, really, really had to, I think not put his foot down, but he had just had to say, hey, we need to get some things done here. Mm. He knows how to manage the environment that he's in. Now, you go out and bring another guy in who has to learn all of that, and what do you get? You get, you know, all the change, all the, you know, uncertainty, how you manage this, how you manage that. I just don't, if you're a Bengals fan, to me, it's hard to be a Bengals fan. Not because they don't have football players, not because they're not well coached, not because they're not exciting. It's just that you want your team to win the Super Bowl, to be aggressive. That's why, to me, right now, if you're a Bills fan, it's a great time to be a Bills fan. It's exciting to be a Bills fan. When you look around and you watch teams that go out and really push the envelope trying to get better, now there's no guarantees they're going to win, but at least it gives you hope. If you're a Cincinnati fan, how do you find hope in that situation?
Well, I'll tell you where it's different as well, Jeff, with Buffalo. I mean, if you told me, if you fast-forwarded to, you know, 3 or 4 weeks from now and told me the Buffalo Bills had traded for Drew Brees, I wouldn't be that surprised, given the off-season they've had. If you told me that the Eagles were going to make a massive headline on draft day and end up with Marcus Mariota, I could believe that. Yeah, I wouldn't expect something like that from the Cincinnati Bengals. So maybe it's, you know, as while those other teams have had some more ups and downs, this is where it's interesting because the Bengals have been consistently good, but just good. Whereas sometimes it's a bit more interesting to follow some of those other teams.
Yeah, and you know, and again, that's unfortunate. You know, if you're Marvin, because I as and again, in my opinion, Marvin has done a phenomenal job in his whatever that is 10, 12 years he's been in Cincinnati. Mm. But you know, as a Bengal fan, you know, gosh, it's got to be tough. Mm. You know, and you know, you even look around at like for example, Jacksonville, right? If you're a Jags fan this offseason, aren't you a little bit excited, right? Mm. You know, you get one of the better tight ends in football to come in there. You get Odor coming in there. They're doing things to improve their football team. I don't see that in Cincinnati, and that would frustrate me.
All right, let's move on to the mailbag. Take a couple of quick questions just to wrap up then. One from Peter Joy, who says, who will ultimately win the Battle of Wills, the Minnesota Vikings or Adrian Peterson? So Peterson's agent has kind of implied that they're done in Minnesota. Mike Zimmer was very adamant at the owners' meeting that they're not going to trade Peterson. I still think this ends with Adrian Peterson playing somewhere else, Jeff.
I agree with you. I think that's the case, and I think it'll probably be and I'm hopeful anyway that it's a win-win. Obviously, he needs a new environment. He needs a, you know, new play. I'll give him a fresh start, and then hopefully that, you know, the Vikings understand what they've got. They've got a huge asset there, and they're not going to give him away. You know, they're not going to just give him away. But you know, this would be a good situation for him to get out of there, get started again, and for them to, you know, continue to build their football team, because I thought they did a good job of improving their football team last year.
Mm. One more question then, Jeff, just to finish off on Inside the Huddle this week. It's from Mal, who says, do you guys agree with Rodney Harrison, who made comments in the past week, that the New York Jets will win a maximum of 5 games next season if Geno Smith is the quarterback? I don't know about 5, because they've improved what's around him, but I think that any Jets fan will be excited by the offseason they've had. And, Jeff, I've got the numbers here in terms of teams and what they spent in free agency. So the number one team was Jacksonville with $172.5 million. The Jets were number two. They've spent $172 million. But anyone who's thinking that they're going to get by without an improvement at the quarterback position, I think they're kidding themselves. So whether it's Geno Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick or it's Mariota in the draft, that position has to give more to this team.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with you 100%. And I know this. You got to score points to win football games, right? And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you got 1 or 50 more than the other team, but you got to score more points than they do. And that means your quarterback's got to play for you. I would not be surprised if by the end of training camp or early in the season, if the Jets don't do anything at all at quarterback, if they just stand pat, that Fitzpatrick gets the job. Mm. Just because he's got a better chance to consistently get the ball to his receivers and to manage the offense in such a way that, you know, that they don't turn it over and they don't screw it up. You know, if you think about that Jets defense last year, how good they were, and then you go out and you add 2 really fine corners to that mix, which is where they were so deficient. Mm. I think, you know, if the Jets can find a way to score 21 points a game, they're going to have a chance to win certainly more than 5 games. And I think if Geno's the quarterback, I'm not sure they can score 21 points a game. I really don't. He's just too inconsistent, too erratic, and too mistake-prone for me.
Yep, me too. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick will be the starter there unless they go another direction in the draft. That's it, Jeff. We're out of time for this week. This has been Inside the Huddle, in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production, and we are sponsored by Sport Lobster. Coach, get better, feel well. Say goodbye.
Aloha. Take care, Neil.